Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Minister of officials from the Department of Public Works, parliamentary staff, and, PMG. Let me welcome everybody present. And we'll do the introductions. My name is Manja Khai, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. I'll allow members to introduce themselves. Thebe.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Boingotlo Thebe. I'm the member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Eddie Makue. I'm from Gauteng.
Honorable Faba.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faba, and I represent the Northern Cape province in this committee.
Good morning. My name is Vusi Magwebu from the Eastern Cape.
Morning. My name is Jacques Lund, and I'm from the Third Cape province, the Western Cape.
Thank you. Honorable Minister.
Tulas Mercy, Minister of Public Works.
Good day. My name is Paul Sirota. I'm the head of the Property Management Trading Entity, PMT.
Good day. My name is Luaz Masang from Performance Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Cox Mukoro. I'm the Chief Finance Officer.
Good day, honorable members. My name is Sam Tubakhale, Program Manager, PMO, Public Works.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Ignatius Sario, Chief Director, EPWP.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members. My name is Clive Mchisa. I'm the Head of Corporate Services.
Good morning. My name is Andre Meiring, and I represent the Policy Branch in the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm George Mugumela from the Office of the Minister.
Chair and members, Samuel Omane, Office of the Minister.
Good morning, I'm Nosti Wotinis, the Deputy Secretary.
Good morning, I'm Mr. Rasmus from Committee Section.
Morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain from PMG.
We have still some of the staff members working on the preparation for our oversight visit to Mpumalanga. What we're going to do now, we're going to receive a presentation from the department. The minister is going to give us a 5 minutes overview, and we then give 30 minutes to the department together with its entity. You only given 30 minutes, up to you how to deal with that situation. Initially, we were given a presentation with 95 pages. When I look at it, I thought it was too long, and but I decided that I'm going to just give you 30 minutes. You'll work it out on your own how you do the presentation. Perhaps normally we are interested on performance information and finances. All the other issues, I now can't even refer to the document because we've just received another revised one with more pages than the 95. I think it's 100 and something now. I was going to suggest that you just zoom in to the performance information, leave out the mission and vision and the other overview achievement, leave it to the minister. Just deal with the performance information as well as the financial information. And then members will have the opportunity to ask questions. We'll give you another 15 minutes to respond. So you have 45 minutes and 5 minutes of the minister, which is 50 minutes altogether. Let me hand over to you, Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson of the Select Committee, the honorable members, the members of the PMG, the leader of the DPW delegation and the senior management of the department, and thank you for affording us this opportunity. Let me just assure the honorable members that my department and I take these engagements very seriously, mindful that your job is to hold the executive and government officials to account. And this process is at the heart of the democratic governance. It's also a key driver of improved service delivery. Mr. Paul Sirot, of course, the head of the PMT and his team, they will present in detail those as we have guided us from those annual reports for the department and the PMTE, the property management trading entity. And of course, with your permission, I would like to take this opportunity just to share with you this brief strategic overview of where the department is headed and progress in terms of our seven-year plan to rebuild public works, which we announced in 2012. Otherwise, it's known as a turnaround plan. The plan was based on two pillars: zero tolerance of corruption and improving the way we do business in public works. Those were the two pillars. At the time, the department was confronted by a number of lease scandals and 8 consecutive years of negative findings by the AG, culminating in multiple disclaimers. That's why we worked so closely with the National Treasury back in 2012 to develop our 7-year plan, exactly to ensure the necessary levels of compliance and financial and management controls. We also actively sought to implement the recommendations of the public protector well long before the matters went to court. I also said at the time that we had to start by rebuilding the capacity within the Department of Public Works, starting with what we call the stabilization of effective and capable leadership by appointing the DG, CFO, and the head of the property management trade entity, and as well as their senior appointments or other senior appointments. Well, the task was to embed the capacity in the department under the DG, because I've had one motto since I came to that department: ministers come and go, but department remains. And that is where we need to build the capacity, so that we don't have, when a minister leaves, it's like you're starting from scratch instead of continuing with or building on what has already been done. This is especially important when it comes to public works, which is a very technical department. In fact, I always ask our honorable members, many people regard, including members of parliament, that public works is a general department, which is a serious mistake. Public Works is not a general department. It's a very technical department in its nature. This is why in the new structure we've established what we call the Professional Services Branch, with a specific mandate to rebuild the technical and professional capacity within the department. We're talking about engineers, quantity surveyors. You mentioned all the built environment specialists. If you're talking about government, those people must be there in the Department of Public Works. In fact, we adopted a strategy of building our own timber, so to speak. Since 2014, we have awarded 228 bursaries. 27 of these students have now completed their degrees and joined the department as candidate professionals. A further 32 are expected to join us at the end of the year. Some are doing honors, some are at master's level, some at third year level, in all the universities. Just to return to the two pillars of the transformation, zero tolerance to corruption, some of the main measures taken include the establishment of the specialized branch government risk and compliance to lead the fight against fraud and corruption. Statistics, the DPW anti-corruption unit has investigated a number of cases, 363 internal allegations between 2010 and 2017, resulting in 241 recommendations for disciplinary action, of which 192 are finalized with sanctions varying from dismissal, final written notices or written warnings and suspensions without pay. There were also 36 referrals to SAP for criminal investigations and prosecution. So we've worked very closely with the SIU on matters of fraud and corruption. They have completed 96 investigations into procurement irregularities in relation to leases and capital projects leading to DCs, the referrals for criminal investigations, and civil actions to recover the monies fraudulently obtained. Currently, SIU is investigating some 4,450 allegations, mainly of conflict of interest. But the task, Chairperson, was much wider than that. We needed to put in place mechanisms to ensure legal compliance, including financial and management controls, and to manage the risk so as to curtail the opportunities for fraud and corruption. And by the way, this approach, in part, was developed in consultation with SARS, with the likes of Ivan Pillay back in 2012. Their philosophy was this: punish the wrongdoers, but more important, curtail opportunities for wrongdoing in the first place. So an important part of ensuring compliance was addressed by our successful clean audit project to turn around the negative findings of the Auditor General. So in relation to DPW vote, we have moved from disclaimers to an unqualified audit over the last 3 years. In more complex environment of the property management trade entity, we have moved from disclaimers to qualified audits, progressively reducing areas of qualification from year to year, from 26 findings down to 2 last year. So the second pillar then talks about the way we do business. And principally, this is just about professionalizing the property management function of Public Works and ring-fencing this function within the property management trade entity. And this was a major undertaking, requiring a new structure for both the department and PMTE, the acquisition of the necessary skills, the development of the necessary policies and business processes. That is where we are now. And honorable members must appreciate this. When we came Public Works, 90% of the staff were just general workers. But the nature of the work of Public Works is construction and property management, which means 75%, which means you needed that ratio in terms of your staffing, of the built environment professionals and property professionals, and they are not coming cheap. So how you turn that around, and you know it's not easy to lay off the people in our environment, I think that must be, appreciated. That's why we are now trying to turn that department around. And just to give a sense of the magnitude of the task, so that I can allow the head of the PMT to continue, who's leading the delegation. Just a sense of the magnitude of that task. In the PMT, we are talking about the largest property portfolio in South Africa, or the continent for that matter, because we're talking some 92,593 facilities on 31,310 land parcels. Before we operationalized the PMTE, the property portfolio was just being run like spaza shop, learning the necessary skills. That's why you'd hear of scandals. That's why you'd have a lot of properties being stolen, or you go to any small dorpy town or city, any space which is open or any dilapidated building, the likelihood was that it would be a government building because we didn't know our own thing. We had to deal with the asset register and we had to manage to ascribe the deemed values to the properties at conservatively it's 112 billion. But this will also now reflect the country's national balance sheet. And finalizing that asset register was the real game changer. So we're improving accommodation to clients. And this is very interesting. And you would find that we were hiring buildings from the private sector instead of the opposite. Us hiring buildings to the private sector because we have more buildings and saving on the fiscus. We're trying to cut costs now. We're trying to lease out the property. We're making the available land and properties for social purposes, including land reform, housing, and the development of the government precincts in small towns. One of our dreams, if you were to look into the small dorpies all over South Africa, where the majority of our people are, you will find that departments have hired offices from Mrs. Watwat House and paying about 250,000 a month, so and so's house and so on. And you find that even those offices are not proper offices. We're now having a vision of building government precincts in small towns where you pull about 5 departments together and have offices of those people. We're starting with our pilot projects now in about 5 towns in the rural areas. So there's a lot we're talking about. Well, on the asset register, we've started a very interesting program called Operation Bring Back. Operation Bring Back is about we're reclaiming the state properties which were illegally occupied or dispossessed of. So we are in that particular process. We've identified 1,287 properties which have been illegally occupied. Well, we're trying to follow it legally and properly. Because these days you can't just throw out people. And there's this thing, that judgment, which says you must give alternative accommodation. But some of them are occupied by officials of the department. They've not been paying any rent, and so on. Some of them, they've altered those structures. And it's not just going to be easy to keep them. Maybe we'll have to sell them at market price to those people who have occupied them. But we're looking into the different strategies and so on. So all I need to say, Chairperson, as I close, we have put our house in order. PMT is developing the new business models to leverage the property and the leasing portfolio for inclusive transformation as well as cost containment and income generation. But I must say this, the transformation issue is a big issue. The slice of the disadvantaged people in terms of our leases, it's a mere 1%. For the disadvantaged, maybe you'll talk about it later on. The property sector is still an old boys club. It's closed, literally closed. The construction sector, some little opening there, because there are a lot of noises, but still, and those are regulated by public works. But even the business government is doing, and I think there's going to be a big debate here, especially now on the new pronouncements of the 30% set aside and so on, what do they mean? Is it going to be on a competitive basis? Or what? And I think that's what the MPs need to watch, because we can have good intentions, but it can be open to a lot of corruption or certain people saying, I'm entitled to get this. Whereas our thinking is that it must be competitive. So we've come a long way as public works. We still have a distance to travel, and I'm sure that when they present the officials of the department, we'll highlight some of the achievements. But the chairperson wants to listen to the challenges. And the honorable members quite rightly point out the areas where we have not achieved, and we will welcome your input and criticism in the firm belief that The first step towards solving any problem is to admit our shortcomings and to commit working hard to address the problems. So in the presentations, the officials will give those details and continuing challenges and risks we face. And of course, they will be requesting your assistance, for example, in addressing the problem of under-reporting of the EPWP work opportunities across levels of government. And I trust this will be a fruitful engagement. And thank you, and allow the leader of our delegation to lead the presentation, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Just a few things. I didn't have the agenda in front of me, so I just continue. There are apologies, Honourable Members, from Honourable Timunye, Honourable Dikhale, also the DG of the department, also extended an apology. Yeah, those are the apologies, but I also want to say that the minister has taken 12 minutes of your time, yeah, so you're no longer having 30 minutes. You have less. He promised to do it within 5 minutes. He added another 7 minutes. Okay, you can continue.
Thanks, Chair. I actually thought the Chair meant 30 minutes per entity. I think in responding to that, I've tried to condense the inputs and guide my colleagues. They'll be working with me. So I'll just give a brief overview. Then Lwazi will then go into the performance, straight into the performance for the DPW. I will then do the performance of the PMTE. And then the CFO will then close off with the financial report. So in opening, just to give the context again, is to say, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is to say that,
sorry, as you continue then, because you won't be going page by page, you just tell us.
I'm on slide 8. Yeah.
Okay, slide 8.
Apologies, thank you. So if one looks at the program structure for the department, it's on the left. It's the administration, which will have internal audit, corporate services, finance, SCM, strategic management, performance monitoring and evaluation. Program 2 deals with matters of intergovernmental coordination. Program 3, EPWP. Program 4, policy regulation for property and construction. Yeah. Program 5, prestige management. Then the program structure for the PMTE, really administration again. Program 2 is real estate investment. Program 3, construction project management. Program 4, real estate management. Program 5, real estate information and registry, where the asset register is managed. And program 6 is facilities management. On slide 9, it just gives an indication of the shared services components, share platforms across the department and the PMTE, and its finance and supply chain management, corporate services, governance, risk and compliance, intergovernmental coordination. I will then move to slide number 11, which provides a very nice context in terms of where we are. You'll recall post the diagnostic report of the technical assistance unit, which is now called GTEC of Treasure, there was a clear indication of the areas that would have to form the basis for any turnaround for the department. And that process started with a stabilization phase in 2012. The department has stabilized. I think we have seen improvements in the audit outcomes, particularly in the department moving from the disclaimer to unqualified, with very few matters that are to be dealt with before we get to a clean audit, and the improvements on the PMTE side, which has moved, the CFO will also touch on that as one of the examples. The phase that is quite critical is the one that deals with efficiency enhancement phase, and you'll see a lot of the talk around enhancement in
in business processes, the implementation of reforms, particularly in the procurement area. If one looks at the procurement of leases, we have totally overhauled the procurement of construction activities, the implementation of IDMS. So it's really issues around efficiency enhancements. At this phase, most of the activities are driven through the PMTE. So that's more or less where we are from a context perspective. I will then move to slide 23, which is where Lwazi then will take us through the specific program performance for the department briefly, and then I will also briefly go through, come back and do the performance of the PMT. Lwazi.
Thanks, Mr. Sirota, and Chair and Honourable Members. I'll just take you through the performance information of DPW, as highlighted in the opening remarks of Mr. Sirota about the structure of DPW. And the presentation is in the context of the second phase, which is just alluded to in terms of efficiency enhancement. And you'll see that the nature and the form of those indicators, particularly for DPW, are now speaking into the efficiency issues. The idea is to look at the efficiencies within the internal controls and the processes, and then that would yield the desired results, and that's the context of the KPIs. I'm going to jump to the program specific, which is now on slide 26, which is program one, administration and management. And the strategic objective there is basically to provide strategic corporate services to the PMTE and DPW, and this is a shared service, as was highlighted in the earlier slides about the two entities and the in-between of the shared service. So this is providing that support to both entities. And the key performance indicators against the targets there, on this code, we've got a unit that deals with fraud and awareness, and their measures are more on the also efficiency issues around the investigations, which needs to be initiated within 30 days of reporting or reported allegations against the target of 100. So that the target was achieved in terms of that. And then in terms of reduction in fraud and corruption, it was achieved at 38% against a target of 50%, so the minimum difference there. You can see that those are basically looking at the internal controls and efficiencies of the systems that then will then drive the needed results towards the end. The second is the second sub-program within Program 1 is finance and supply chain management, and all the measures are largely also efficiency driven. For instance, if you look at the reduction in the regular expenditure, I think CFO will touch on it in detail in this presentation, but as a target, it's been set to look into the internal controls and how we get to that reduction, looking at the history of irregular expenditure. And the target was set at 30%, and the achievement for the financial year was 44%. In terms of invoices settled within 30 days, which is also a compliance target, a very important compliance target, which also speaks to service providers. And the target is all because it's a compliance indicator, is set at 100%. We're standing at 75% for DPW. Bids that needs to be awarded within 56 working days of closure of tender. Against the target of 50%, the department is standing at 78% for the financial year under review. In terms of procurement, above looking at the market price with preferential premium of goods and services, we have a target set at 140. We're currently sitting at 101%. So this is an achievement because it's below the market price. Continuing again on Program 1. Now, Program 1 also, the sub-program, which is corporate services, which is the third sub-program within the first program. For as an enabler and an efficiency in terms of the work of the department, there's also the need to ensure that you have the right capacity within the organization, and that then calls for a review of the organizational structure, which has already been submitted to DPSA, and then the migration process of staff between PMTE and DPW is already in progress, and so that's going to inform the capacity issues and the matching and placing within the organization. In terms of the prioritization of vacant field posts, vacant posts, it's also an important aspect because the efficiency aspect of it is a period in which from the advert to the filling of the position is important. and we're sitting at 100%, which amounts to 603 appointments made, 707 promotions that were made. Also, in terms of our contribution to the skills development in the organization and also to the broader government programs, we've got young professionals, interns, learnership, management training, program artisans, all together coming to about 1,294 against a target of 1,067 for the financial year. As an enabler in the organization, because we're looking at a large number of systems that are driving the organizational processes, it's basically the ICT machinery and also hardware. So quite a number has been achieved, quite a number of issues have been achieved there, such as the multi-tier hardware infrastructure upgrades to keep abreast with the changes in the environment, completed electronic procurement system installed in the organization and works for you, as well as mobile applications for ease of access to drive the necessary speed to work with speed. And then also cases of fraud and awareness, fraud and corruption, we've got 7 of 7 that were done, so it's 100%. Chair, in terms of Program 2 of Intergovernmental, this is a coordinating function, but it's an input-driven which works across all spheres of government. So they've got a number of meetings and workshops that are held to draw inputs from various spheres of government to then drive what is deemed the public works sector and then what is the role and function of public works within the sector. So we've got those meetings, the diagnostic report, which has formed the basis for what is actually public works, the service delivery frameworks that are completed. And then as a measure of a balanced scorecard within the organization, we also got what we call the MPED management performance assessment tool that is used in the organization. That measures four critical areas: human resource management, governance and accountability, financial management, as well as strategy. So we measure that using an index, and the maximum score is 4, and the minimum score is 0. And we've moved from a base of 1.6 from 2012. We're now sitting at a score of 2.9 against the target of 2.7 that was set for the financial year, and there's progress that's moving forward. In terms of EPWP, which is the Program 3 under DPW, we're basically working on work opportunities that we created. We have about 741,540 work opportunities against a target of 1.1 million created during the financial year. And then we also have work opportunities created within municipalities of 695,203 against 700,000 for this as a target. There's also participation in terms of designated groups broken down into this area: women, youth, and people with disabilities. And then those are the targets that have been achieved: 68.5 against 55 for women, and then 45.9 against 55 for youth, and 1.68 against 2% for people with disabilities. And then we also provide incentives to public bodies, eligible public bodies, and then 100% was provided to eligible bodies to execute the mandate of public of EPWP or public employment programs. We also give support to 278 municipalities, and this was achieved against the set target of all the municipalities that we have in the country, as well as public bodies in terms of signing off the reports as official reports that reflect the work opportunities. We have about 353 out of 366 public bodies that have reported. And then, Chair, this basically now is just a summary of most of this information of the work opportunities between non-state sector, created work opportunities, the EPWP sector, and infrastructure. I think I'll go to the next slide, which then gives you the breakdown per sector, which is slide 32. Slide 32 then gives you the breakdown per sector of the work opportunities that have been created against those targets, as well as the full-time equivalent that have been created within those sectors. The sectors got infrastructure, environment and culture, social, non-state community works program, and then non-state, that's a non-profit organization, and then it gives you the total of the work opportunities, as well as the full-time equivalent within that particular financial year. And then this then becomes the slide 33, is the provincial breakdown from Eastern Cape over to Western Cape. And then we look at provinces, what is the work opportunities created within provinces, municipalities, and then we add up to get the totals of the work opportunities that have been created in the financial year 2015-16. And then program four, Chair and honorable members, basically it's about the regulation of the transformation of the construction property, and that deals with white papers, public works white papers, the drafting and the review of those white papers to look at in context of public works. Now, this ties back to Program 2 Intergovernmental, where we said it draws information from various spheres of government to look at what is public works as a sector and the role and the mandate of public works. So that will then call for a review of all these documents. The idea is to look at the clarification of the mandate of department, as I think Minister alluded about reclaiming the mandate of public works, as well as developing policies. And also in the support of the entities of the department is IDT, who is looking at the review and the review processes and also development of a business case for IDT as a supporting arm of the department in executing the mandate, as well as drafting of contractor development implementation reports. So that has been done. What's left now is there's an internal processes within the organization to finalize those reports and then before implementation. And then the last program in DPW is Prestige Portfolio, Prestige Policy. Now, this basically deals with the Prestige Portfolio, which includes parliamentary villages. But the main issue is to look at, again, an efficiency issue, is, again, to look at the norms and standards on how we execute our mandate within. And then also the issues around the provision of guidelines on installation, management, and maintenance of security infrastructure at the national key points. So these are basically the major issues within DPW, the performance information of DPW under those five programs of DPW. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I will then move to slide 38. And in slide 38, I'll get straight into Program 1, as indicated previously what Program 1 does, but you'll see 100% of the ICT SLA commitments achieved, business application on the call center, 100% of legal opinions and contracts formulated within 5 working days of request. I mean, if one were to reflect on that first bullet, that deals with ICT, I think it's also proper to mention that. As an example, if one looks at the procurement reforms for leasing, the development of the entire system that will change the way we interact, not just with our user departments, but with our landlords, for example, and the asset register, was totally internally developed. You know, so that's the level of capacity that we have built in the area. Then the issue around vacancy rates, the targets, specifically targeting the reduction of the 25% vacancy rate. We're currently sitting at 15.32% with vacancies at 1,098 and filled sitting at 6,070. The program that deals with specifically skills development cuts across both the department and the PMT, and it was covered in the previous presentation. On slide 39, we then deal with matters of finance and SEM. 85% of invoices paid within 30 days of receipt against the target of 100%. There have been some implementations of new systems as well to help us to deal and track and manage this area a lot better. And I think when the CFO presents, he'll also give an indication of how far we have come in terms of the improvements in the current period as well. 22% in rent terms, 412 million reduction of the 1.8 billion debtors balance. 90% collection of the 13.621 billion target was set at 90%. That's for debtors as well. 97% procurement cost. Market price with preferential premium of goods and services purchased, target set at 140% procurement cost. In terms of program two, this is really a program where we do a lot of the planning based on the user requirements. You know that DIAMA requires that the user departments prepare user asset management plan. For the first time in this financial year, we managed to get all the user asset management plans from the departments that we service to enable us to project the demand for accommodation. And it was a very important from a timing perspective, because you'll see later on it's the same year that we finalized the asset register as well. So those were the 42. From a precinct development perspective, two clear proposals have been completed for the Northern Gateway and Southern Gateway. This is in the city of Tshwane. The extent of that development is in the region of 700,000 square meters, so 350,000 square meters each. To give you a bit of a perspective, if you know Pretoria, Salvacop, as you come in opposite Koshimamburu, that's Southern Gateway or Salvacop, as we have come to know it. And Northern Gateway is right on the opposite side of the northern side of the city, near the zoo. Two precinct proposals have also been finalized for Mandeni and Mount Fletcher. That's more on the small and rural town program. 12% increase in the value of immovable asset portfolio. The target was set at 2%, 12%. You know that as we finalize the asset register, the determined value, deemed cost, as it's called in accounting terms, is sitting at 112 billion. 100% of preliminary investment decisions are approved within the prescribed period, being 1, 3, 6, 9, or 24 months. For construction, refurbishments, leasehold, and surplus freehold. This program is quite important because from a planning perspective, it then sets in motion the activities, as you can see, for the other programs. 100 vacant freehold properties identified for redevelopment by BBB developers. 82% investment decisions approved to support Operation Pakisa projects. 9 of the 11 Operation Pakisa aquaculture-related leases signed. Target was between 60 and 80%. 100% of investment decisions approved on proclaimed fishing harbors for infrastructure. 3 performance reports on the performance of identified buildings and 2 reports on the performance of 10 freehold and leasehold buildings measured against industry standards. When one then looks slide 42, the construction and project management, it's one of 3 programs that are currently undergoing significant reform, and construction is one of those, leasing is the other, and facilities management is the other, program 6. In terms of the work opportunities created through the construction project, we were able to link the 11,126 work opportunities, fully verified in terms of the standards of the EPWP. We have created more job opportunities, but what we could get measured in terms of the reporting standards of EPWP, that's what we managed to verify. 125 projects completed within agreed construction period, 109 projects completed within approved budget, 118% of construction contracts are allocated towards BBB as the target. When one then looks at program 4, so this is the other program that I've indicated is currently undergoing significant reform, is the issue of dealing with vacant land, 849 land parcels secured to be let out towards economic development initiatives. We had targeted 100. 646 lease agreements reviewed according to the rental rate per square meter and escalations. I think this has been one of the biggest issues in the past, where we have not been able to adequately manage escalations. And over time, the rate per square meter has gone beyond what is called the market, which in itself is also a relative term, because the market is an average of historical transactions that have happened. but we have put measures in place. We have got quite a few reports across our portfolio that start to inform specifically the matters that we need to be considering when we are looking at this particular matter. That is a significant move. I think you'll start seeing that coming through when we are talking about our cost-saving initiatives. We now know which leases to target. In fact, we are about to go into a negotiation with the major portfolio holders of property exposed to government to renegotiate all of those leases, which is a process that will unfold in the next month. 80.19% leases renewed before expiry date. The target was set at 75%. This is a good target to have because you will know that the leases not expired could result in irregular expenditure. The need for the reforms and the efficiencies in this area are predominantly driven by the fact that if we were to continue as is business as usual, we are talking about approximately 120 tenders per month for lease agreements, and we know that that is not possible. So through the work that we have done and with Treasury as well, we should see Treasury putting in place the SCM leasing framework, which we have worked on for the last year. That ought to come into effect 1st of April. We have geared our processes to comply from day one because we had the benefit of having worked with Treasury. Our advert on the entire portfolio, in fact, went out in November with a closing date of the end of February. 50.9% surplus freehold property allocated towards triple BEE. I'm quite happy to report that the question that Minister asked me earlier is being responded to in a number of ways. We know that the new regulations of Treasury go some way in assisting us in terms of implementation. But if we are to be true to Section 207 of the Constitution, we needed to have a clear policy and a clear program. Now, the policy is being finalized. It's currently in consultation. We have had a consultation with the provinces. We are having a further consultation this week, and it's currently in circulation with the sector. So we are hoping that we are still on track to finalize the signature of the policy before the end of March, which will then set in motion the implementation of the program, which we are working together with the industry on and the financial institutions, because that's been the biggest barrier of the transfer of ownership when it comes to properties in this country. In essence, if one looks at our portfolio, we really have in the region of about 26, 27 landlords. If you look at the spread of the significant property funds that are listed on the JSE, they are not many, they are merely a handful, and then the rest of the listed funds that are there. So there is a clear need for us to start zooming in on the specific issues that affect the lack of transformation in the sector. We have chosen to look specifically at areas such as ownership as a predominant issue determiner. Then we have also looked at the other areas around control, skills development, and the implementation of employment equity and affirmative action across the board. So the program is really in an advanced stage of development. If I then can go to program FAS, which really previously had focused on the need for us to get an asset register done. So we are quite happy to say that we have got the asset register done. The asset register has informed us with respect to a perspective. We now know we've got 92,500 properties. We know that of those 92,500 properties, approximately 6,500 of those are offices. Approximately 36,000 of those are residential properties. And the balance are really what we call specialized facilities, which are your prisons, your courts, and so forth, and other specialized facilities. That is the statistical information and the perspective. Now, if I were to compare that to to the company that I always compare to. If one looks at the largest property holder listed on the property stock listed on the JSE, it's Growthpoint, and they are managing just below 480 properties. 92,500 properties gives you some perspective. Now, we have managed to deal with the issues that pertain to the asset register. Going into program six, which is the most affected by the reality that we now have an asset register. Now, what do we do about it? And how do we effectively manage that asset register? We know that we are occupying at least 96% of the facilities that are there. We then have to look at closely how we are managing the buildings. So we have got a target that deals with facilities management contracts, and we had identified 718 buildings. Issues of resource efficiency are quite significant. In the new build program, we have taken that into account, but we have got a specific measure that starts to say how much are we reducing in terms of kilowatt-hour usage. And those are the numbers there. You see we have achieved 284 million versus the 220 million that was targeted. In terms of water, 4 million kiloliters savings achieved, which is slightly above what we had targeted. And 82% of the facilities management contracts were allocated towards BBB. There are issues with respect to performance in some of the areas. When one starts to unpack issues such as unscheduled maintenance, we have not done well in the past. We now know and understand why we have not done well when we got the asset register and started looking. Firstly, we did not have a specific program that dealt with maintenance for the portfolio. I'd like to say we took a decision. We are starting from a zero base. We now have an FM strategy. The strategy says the following. There is absolutely no way that we will go to every single building and implement certain issues, because there is a lot to be understood about the buildings. We took a sample of 300 buildings. We are now monitoring those buildings over a six-month period, but it had to start somewhere with a condition assessment. The condition assessment starts to tell you the cost of not having maintained the buildings over a period of time consistently. It also tells you that a building works in has different components that work differently. So you've got your brick and mortar, take a 50-year view. You've got your lift, take a different view in terms of the manufacturer specifications. You look at your heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. You look at your boilers. So what has emerged now is we are now writing a very specific program in response to those condition assessments, which then helps us as well to determine how much money is actually required to keep the facilities in a condition that is acceptable. So if I were to give you some indications of numbers that are emerging so that we have the context, is we're looking at about 300 buildings, and our expectation is that on average we will have backlog maintenance and current maintenance that is required on critical components in particular, in the region of about 50 million rand per building on average. CFO, that gives us 15 billion. And that's just 300 buildings. It starts to give you an indication of the kind of strategies that must be informed, the financial model that we are currently working on, if we are to be a sustainable organization. Those are the real issues. Those are the real numbers that are emerging. I think I will pause and then give the CFO an opportunity to then deal with the financial aspects, which will be on slide 62.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honourable members, Minister, I'll try and summarise this, given the fact that the chair has indicated the allocation of time. I'm afraid we've overrun the time. Just walking through the two sets of financial statements of the two reporting entities, we have the main vote, which is the Public Works, DPW main vote, and the PMTE. The main vote, as you may recall, members, is account on the basis of the modified cash. It is accounting for the funds that come from the national fiscus. The PMTE, on the other side, is a trading account, and by virtue of it being a trading account, accounts for its financials on the basis of an accrual-based accounting. So those are the two distinctions. And this year, that's the year under review, that's the 15-16 financial year that we are looking at. There have been significant changes within the department, which find expression in when you actually read the financial statements, you need to have the context right. And I'll start by the context being as follows. This is the first year when we have really separated the functions of the main board and the PMTE properly, whereby the main board's real focus becomes policy formulation and coordinating the public works sector. As in the public works sector, the department itself, the public works national, and the province. And the built environment and the construction industry. That's really what the main board does, sets policies and coordinates. Whereas the PMT becomes the implementer of programs of the department in terms of construction projects, the management of our portfolio, which is as expansive as Mr. Sarati has indicated in terms of the quantum that you are looking at. So we've separated those kind of things. And this is the first year that you really start to see the real performance if you are looking at these things separately. And this has resulted in us having to now change the program structure of the main vote. The programs that we have in the main vote remain the same in terms of number. However, the nature of the programs that we have changed significantly. And you can see that if you look at the slide that talks about the programs in the main board, it's in the slide set. But I'm just trying to give an outline of the context of the financials. So if you take the last year's, which is the 14-15 financials, and compare them to this year's financials, which is the 15-16, there's a significant difference if you compare program to program. However, in terms of the allocation is not that different based on an allocation plus what the increment that you get from National Treasury. So it's important to realize that distinction, and that's where we are. If you look at the administration in 14-15, which is the first two columns, you're looking at about administration 1.2 billion rand allocation. This year, it's 180 million. If you look at immovable assets, last year we had the program, the year before, which was called the Immovable Asset Management Program. That is a program that accounted for the property management and construction activities of the department. So in a location of 2.8, this year that program has disappeared and it's been subsumed and collapsed into your property construction and industry policy in the next year, as you can see. The prior year, 34 million rand, the year that follows in terms of that program, property and construction industry policy, is 3.7. That shows the increase of the expenditure or the allocation in that program because of the transfer of functions where you took your immovable asset management in the prior year and took those funds into the policy program to account for the transfer that you're going to be doing to the PMTE and other entities that you have. And the EPWP has not changed. As you can see, not much. You have 1.9 billion instead of 1.9 billion in the current year. That has not changed. And your auxiliary and associated services has 32, and then your prestige has moved to 89. Your prestige was included in the prior year in the auxiliary services. However, now the construction work that has to do with prestige is moved to the property management trading entity, hence the reduction when you look at this. So of course this can help when you actually look at it, because it will not make sense if you if you look at that, about that context. So this, when you go to the PMTE, you'll also realize the differences that you have. Because now, we have the PMTE, and it's operational, and we've got a program structure for the PMTE, and I'll talk about that when you get to that. But like I said, in terms of the allocation is 6.1 in the prior year, 14-15. The comparative of the year that we are looking at is 6.3. So the total remains the same. It is the changes in the program structure that that one should try and highlight. So comparators, if you take 14-15 annual report, you take 15-16 annual report, it's almost like a chocolate cheese kind of type of thing. But I thought to try and help to contextualize that. Then in terms of what we're going to cover, like I said, I think we have spoken about just in terms of the table of contents. I'm not going to get into the slides themselves. I'm just going to talk the overall kind of, you know, understanding and highlights of the financial statements for the main vote. The journey, which the minister, you know, alluded to earlier on, of turnaround and where we are today. Funds expression within our audit outcomes, and for the main vote, which is a slide that follows for the main vote, you can see for the main vote, we are moving from a red to a green situation. And that green is getting greener. And getting greener means we are walking towards a clean audit. That's what we're looking at. The kind of issues that we're going to deal with, which is in the current year that you are looking at, 15-16, I mean, it's just issues that AG raised as an emphasis of matter and had to deal with, you know, issues of the statement of the corresponding figures, you know, in the financials, and the reliability of financial information. So from an administration point of view, when you talk about clean administration, we believe that, you know, we have a foot in the door now already, and we can start to improve this further. And then... just going back to the table of contents, I mean, the issues of the environments and the shifting, when you take our appropriation statement and how we smoothed out the budget. And I think what's important for the members, honorable members, is the extent to which you've done this, because it's a reflection of your financial management at the department. And I can just quickly highlight on, in terms of that, what you're looking at. If you look at the total requirements, shifting of funds, you can see under administration, we shifted 29 million rands of funds. And that 29 million rands of funds was in the same program. We've moved it to payments for financial assets because we had an under-expenditure on the current payments in terms of things that we can get into the detail of. But we shifted that money to sort out an expenditure that we did not anticipate, and that expenditure was, when we looked at it, we started to clean the books and realized that there were old outstanding debts that were becoming unrecoverable, or the recoverability was becoming very remote. So we said, let's clean up the books and write them off, whilst the things that are, you know, in terms of the legal issues and all that are proceeding, but let's just clean the books, so we use the chance to do that. When you look at program two, 12 million rands moved from current payments to sort out another pay of financial assets. And that is also for the same purpose as I've indicated. And then when you look at the environments, you can see the environments themselves. The biggest environment is again within the same program, which is program three. We moved 12 million rands out of current payments and moved it to transfers and subsidies. And that had to do with the issue of Agrima SA, which, as you may recall, was an entity that was not registered as an entity in terms of Public Finance Management Act. It has been an entity that sits there, operating from CSIR, having been established since 1969, but has never been formalized as an entity. As a result, the funding that we provide to them could not be classified as transfers, but we did them under goods and services, and we had to do it every year. This has been going on year. We had to do the environments to try and rectify that situation. This is a historical thing. It's now done. As you know, we have passed the Agrima Bill and the Law Act, and Agrima is established as an entity. We registered the transfers. We're not going to have that in the future. So that's the... So that's just an indication of the financial management that I wanted to to indicate how you move around your budget and to smooth it out. So from an appropriation statements perspective, which is this slide, which is slide 70 and 71. If you look at slide 70 and 71, I mean, it starts from program 1, program 2, program 3. It indicates each program how you have spent on the last column, where expenditure against your appropriation. And on an overall perspective for the department, grand total, we spend 99.5% of what was allocated to us. I think that's what you want to know, is have you been spending the money? Because in public sector, spending is a crime. Oh, not spending is a crime, sorry. Not spending is a crime. And then you cannot overexpend, but you stay within what you have in the envelope. So we spend 99.5% of our budget, of our location, 6.3. We spend 281. We had an under expenditure of 31 million, which we can report as to where it came from. And lastly, it came from the way we managed our budget, especially our spending, especially with respect to compensation of employees, whereby I think we really had to do this quite tightly. And most of the positions that we could have filled earlier with, you know, stretch them, you know, push the current employees to do, the staff members to do things, you know, that require more people. But he said, let's manage this thing so that we don't go over compensation of employees, because you'll see in terms of our unauthorized expenditure, which I can talk to later on, because those are kind of numbers that I know members would like to know, which will indicate that we did not have to incur an unauthorized expenditure for spending money, especially overspending on compensation. We had to keep that tightly. So by the time we actually did the adverts and started to appoint the people just towards the end of the year, so by the time they come, we're not spending the salaries over 12 months, we're spending that of those people that you engaged for a period of 3 months. So you have an under expenditure that leads to. So luckily that was that. I'll just go back again to the table of contents, because I think it gives me kind of a sense of how to walk the members through this. And then we get to the statement. So that deals with the appropriation statement. Appropriation statement is how much was appropriated to you, and how much have you spent, and have you underspent or overspent. So we have not overspent, we have underspent, and there my expenditure is also very small compared to the historical things that we come from, and can explain it clearly as to what way it arose from. And the statement of financial performance, which is on slide 81 in this presentation, that one shows us, and I think we should go to quickly to that slide, on financial performance. It shows to us what revenues have you collected and what are the expenditures that you incurred against that revenue to determine whether you have a surplus or you have a deficit. And as you can see, year-on-year comparative, 14, 15, and 15, 16. In the prior year of 14, 15, we were under a surplus of 150, and in this current year, we have a surplus of 38 million rand. And this surplus of 38 million rand, if you recall, if you go back to our professional statement, you had an under-expenditure of 38 million rand, which is actually reflective of what you have. Total revenue, less your expenditure, you have that. That's largely what it was actually entails. And I think the numbers that could interest the members in terms of this, like I said, year-on-year comparatives, if you look at the numbers, if you say 14, 15, and 15, 16, look at the compensation, the appropriation, more or less the same. Look at your compensation of employees. Current year, 435 million. Last year, 1.6 billion. Why? Last year includes the PMT. This year, you took out the PMT, which you report in the PMT, like I said earlier on. Goods and services, similarly, all of that transfers, you had 5.4 in the current year compared to 2.5 in the previous year. Why? Because the expenditures like compensation of employees related to PMTE, goods and services that relate to PMT of 1.430 have now been clubbed together into the transfers to the PMT from the main board. Hence, the transfers in the current year is 5.4. compared to last year's 2.5. So I think that's, Do you want to move on? And then let's just, okay, again, maybe then we can get to financial position, which is on slide 84. And I'll try and just walk through that again, highlight the main numbers on the financial position. The financial position tells you what are the assets of the department against the liabilities of the department to determine whether you are in a net asset position or net liability position. And again, we've listed the assets. And remember, this is on a cash basis, not an accrual basis. There's a lot of accruals that are sitting outside, whether accruals of, you know, accrued assets or accrued liabilities, sitting outside of this off-balance sheet because you are on a modified cash basis. So if you want to go into a graph, you need to pull those into this thing, and then you'll have a different scenario. This is on a cash basis. So on a cash basis, we are on a net asset situation of 4.9 compared to last year of 10.6. And the big numbers that you want, that you probably want me to highlight, you can see the unauthorized expenditure has remained the same. So in the current year, we've not incurred any unauthorized expenditure. And the unauthorized expenditure, if you see that, that comes from years back, come back many years. These have been discussed at various levels, including SCOPA. SCOPA had even issued a recommendation to National Treasury to resolve this matter. I believe National Treasury is busy trying to assist us in resolving the 261 million of unauthorized expenditure coming back in years, and that had to do with the, you know, eradication of mud schools, which meant doing things that we are not mandated to do. But the schools are there, they are working, everything is okay. But the expenditure is incurred outside of mandate, and this is something going back. The increase in compensation of employees around EPWP, when we started to massify EPWP going back after the first year, the year that followed, we just increased the numbers of people to ensure that EPWP is gaining that level of impetus to do what it needed to do. So all this came from that. So it's a thing that can be resolved. I suppose this will soon be coming forth to Parliament to resolve, and I think that's where it is. Then under receivables, the 458. The 458 relates to, if you compare with last year, 8 million. 458, you're going to say, oh, you're not collecting the monies. Your debtors are increasing, because that's literally debtors. Largely that amount relates to two things. One is a PMTE, some of the order of about 410 million rand, is the money that we incur on behalf of PMTE. Remember, we transfer funds to PMTE. But because we currently have one system, like your compensation, the personal system is still the same, we had to get, before you could get two separate personal systems for the main vote at the PMTE, where you can't get a personal system for a trading entity or trading account without having an approved structure. So it's a kind of thing. That's now resolved. We have an approved structure. The application for a new personal system is already happening. So all of that is now happening. Will not result anymore. So it's money that we've incurred on behalf of, as a department, on behalf of the PMT, which needs to be recovered from the PMT, is about 410 million rand. And the 40 million rand of that residual amount relates to the money that we spend on behalf of the DBE in terms of the school's beautification program that we ran for them. That's 40 million rand that we spend on behalf of the DBE. That's the Department of Basic Education. That's where the amount comes from. And then in terms of the voted funds being surrendered to the revenue fund, you can see the figure of an expenditure. If you look at it, 31 million now. Last year, just 104. And I think the important number, which is a number that we can talk around, that you have an interest in, is the bank overdraft. And the bank overdraft, maybe if I can just refer the members to slide 88, and slide 88 to determine what is the makeup of the bank overdraft. The makeup of the bank overdraft is the first thing that you have a historical problem, and that historical problem is called the unauthorized expenditure. And associated with unauthorized expenditure is that you spend the money. You're not getting it back up until it's voted by Parliament. You spend the money, And because you spend the money outside of your mandate, Parliament says you must go and get that money must be recoverable. So you spend the money out and you must still raise that expenditure as a debtor. So you have a situation where, wow, so it's your contribution to your bank overdraft. Then the payment that you have not recovered, you know that 548 that I spoke about that were receivable, because of that increase, money that you spent for the PMQ, blah, 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 that increased 512, and the liabilities that we have not paid, and that gives us 648 million rand bank overdraft. So the question will be, why would you run a bank overdraft for public water funds? That is within the PMG account, and like I said, you can unpack what makes up that bank overdraft figure, and I hope that that helps. And then we can go then, Rosie, to, in terms of, just on the table of contents, I thought I could just highlight important notes that members, you know, numbers that members like to ask about. The first one that I was, you know, that I spoke about was the, was the, was the unauthorized expenditure. And it's on, you can just flip through to slide 86, Rosie. That's the 261. Year on year, that has been the same. We have not incurred any additional unauthorized expenditure. It's 261, and you can see it comes back many years, and that's what it is, the makeup. Overspending on compensation of employees, overspending on goods and services, unauthorized expenditure as a result of capital expenditure on schools. Those are also the education of mass schools in the Eastern Cape and the Northwest. As we said, overpayment on capital assets, overpayment on transfer subsidies, and that relates to the Lima FA in Tarot. And that gives us a decision to work. And we can go back in terms of the next slide. We can see on the next slide the whole aging of the thing. 2008, 2007, going all the way back to where all these transactions came from. And that's where we are. The other number that I thought will interest the members is the regular expenditure, and I can just zoom into that as well, and I think it's on slide 90. That's the regular expenditure. That's opening balance 66 million. The main, the only additional regular expenditure has been incurred for about 1 million in the current year, indicative of the controls that we have implemented to improve and so that we deal away with the regular expenditure. So that's what it was. The 366 is subject to a process of investigation as to start by Treasury how you deal with the regular expenditure. So all of that, that takes time. You have people do whatever and investigate and come to a conclusion. So that still remains. The process of investigation and all that is happening. We built up our capacity to do this thing by engaging additional persons. So that is happening. But in terms of whether we are contributing or we are depositing to the regular expenditure account, on an ongoing basis, the only amount is 1.6 million rand. And that 1.6 million rand, as you can see, 923 of that relates to the issues of local content. It's a certain requirement that says you shall have so much in terms of your procurement of local content, and that's where you couldn't get it. You could have got it. We couldn't get it, and I guess we tried, but we couldn't get local content in terms of what we're trying to do. In addition to that, there's instance of having not received three quotations, but probably two or one quotation, because you keep asking for quotations, but people are not responding. And then you end up with a kind of situation with a 584. So really, it's a fairly minuscule amount. And then the last figure that I thought would appear interest members also. These are 2% weight school, and also that in terms of the what to be increased this amount to. As you can see, the actual amount of 1.5 million rand relates to interest paid on overdue TV license. I mean, TV license was saying from nowhere we just hit with something I suppose we're sleeping or we didn't. But all the TVs that we have in the department all over the place because of our responsibility, we happen not to have been paying TV license. And so we woke up and followed us and we had to pay about 1.5 million rand for TV license. I think that concludes the main vote, members. I will then move on to the PMPE quickly. Okay. Okay, on the PMT, I think that I'm now going to shift to the PMT, and that's the accrual-based accounting for the property management trading entity. And in terms of what, like I said earlier on, the property management trading entity being the entity that does the implementation and implementation of our construction project, implementation of our property management of the entire portfolio that we talk about. And again, we can cut back our minds to the journey where we are coming from, where we're coming from and where we are. And the best indicator of that, as you know, is the audit outcome. And from an audit outcome perspective, we have sustained qualified audit outcomes over the past 3 years. And yes, the overall outcome is the qualified, but when you look at the actual basis of the qualification, you can see we are working down and managing the issues down that relate result in the qualification. 13, 14, we have 3 findings, 12 non-compliance findings, and all of that. In the next year, from the 12 and whatever, 3 findings, 18 non-compliance. The year that we are looking at, there's only 2 qualification issues. I mean, but if you go back 11, 12, where we started turnaround, you can see the rate. Now we are on an amber. So, fairly, I mean, we believe that we are now getting to the green side. And once we are in the green, we can start to, and the green being an unqualified for an outcome. So that shows the extent of the interventions that we have activated and put in place and the gains we have managed to achieve to date. And it is important for us to defend those gains and work and improve on them even further. So in terms of, like what I said, to understand the context of the financials, I spoke about the transfer of function. And the transfer of functions, in terms of, it's a major highlight in the year under review. And even though we transfer the functions of the property management to the PMTE, you know, going back in terms of the decision in the year 2012-13, in actual fact, the actual real transfer now happened in this year, because that's when now we took the budget out of the main vote and gave it to the PMTE, and all the other things that happened was, now that the PMTE had the budget to itself, we had to put together a PMTE program budget structure that talks to the actual functions that the PMTE does. So we've got a new budget structure of the PMTE. Now in terms of that, the kind of things that come about when we, where were you? Are you not on the PMTE? Oh, you're on the PMTE. Okay. That the highlights in this financial that one can give into the PMT is on slide 25. You can talk to, I spoke about the transfer of budget. We dealt with that already. And as a result, when you look at the financials, there's a line that says services in kind. That number will be significantly reduced in the current year because now we're carrying the budget under the PMT. Then the one thing that members I know always want to ask a question about is the issue around the bank overdraft and what it is and what it entails, and I think we can have a full spiel around the bank overdraft where it comes from. But literally, the issue around the current business model, operating model of the PMTE, wherein we spend money on behalf of client departments and recover it later. And that in itself gives you a 90-day lag. And if you look at it, for 3 months, on a monthly basis, plus minus, we spend about 300 million rand. So, for 3 months, we talk about 900 million rand. So, embedded as a result of the business or operating model of the PMT, was in the bank overdraft, there's an amount of 900 million rand that is almost fixed. Until you change your bank or your operating model, you know, when I have a situation where you don't have that bank overdraft. So, you need to just change the model, and we'll do away with about a 900 million rand of bank overdraft. The bank overdraft, as it stands, is at, if you look at, it's about 1.4, 1.5 billion rand. So you take away out of the 1.4, 1.5, you take away 900, you're left with 900. Now that's 600. We can then break it down as to relate it to the amounts that are outstanding that are not paid by our debtors now. And we can break it down going back to the debtors that go to prior. And that's about another 440 million rand, which you are working down and managing downwards. The rest would be something that is current and not a major concern. So that's kind of the makeup of the bank overdraft as we why it increased the number of things, also and the recovery of revenue during the period, as well as an increase in expenditure. One of the biggest increases that we had in terms of our expenditure was around our rates, the settlement of our rates to the municipalities, because we ran a program on behalf of all government departments to deal with the issue of municipal rates that are unpaid to the municipalities because it's becoming a problem. And we coordinated the functions, and we are also a contributor, so we settled most of those, and that resulted in us spending more than what we had anticipated in terms of the expenditure. The other significant issue of that...
Can I give you 2 minutes?
Okay.
We've already spent an hour.
Then the other significant issue...
Initially, it was going to be 30 minutes.
Thank you.
Now it's more than an hour.
I thought I was very entertaining, but it's okay.
I see that you're passionate. maybe some of the clarification will come from the questions.
So in the rest, the other is the cost that you applied value to the assets and all of that. But lastly, Chair, I mean, the important thing which we can highlight is that, I mean, PMTE, from an operations perspective, when you look at slide 99, it's a 12 billion rand operation, and that 12 billion rand is small. So that's our revenue, 12 billion rand, and against that, we've got expenditures about 13 or 14 billion that we come under in terms of a deficit and a surplus. In terms of the assets, in terms of, if you go back to the financial position, which is like 97, was it? Then we have, you can see, the actual worth of PMTE as we stand today is about 116, 117 billion rand of total assets that we have. And against those assets, we've got liabilities of about 12 billion, which gives us a net asset of 104. That's the next slide. 12 billion liabilities, that's a net asset of 104. So it's a very strong operation from that perspective. And like I said, the bulk of this is a result of the portfolio that we have, which we applied a deemed cost. We are not even talking about the market value of the property. We're talking about deemed cost, and that's what it is. I'll leave it at that, Chair, and in the interest of time. Thank you.
You want to conclude? Before I allow members to ask questions, I think let me also appreciate the report, especially that it also refers you to the main annual report. This tells you which pages that you should refer to. But my problem also with the presentation. I wish that when you deal with each program, for example, let's say administration, you indicate how many targets that particular program has, and how many targets have you achieved, and then you can elaborate in terms of those achievements, what are the achievements, and those that you have not achieved. You elaborate as to why those. So it makes it easier for you so that members don't have to probe you why certain achievements have not been, because they are already indicated there. But also, I was looking at this program 4 of the department, Property and Construction Industry Policy and Research. You know, the way, if you look at the slide number 34, it doesn't tell you that there was an APP and targets with regard to this. It gives an impression as if this is what the government is, the department is still going to do. Yet this was from the APP, and it doesn't indicate that these have not been achieved. You know, if you were to just read it, that the department is in the process of putting a team to develop the white paper and public work. But when you go to this group, the issue of white paper is a target, is a performance target. But if you were to read it here, you won't know that, because the way it's crafted, it's all three ways, so that the members don't see that it was a target, and a target that has not been achieved. You know. So a person who relies only on the presentation would miss out, because if you go to that particular program, there are a lot of targets not achieved, targets not achieved. Actually, there are 7 targets. None of them have been achieved. But if you were to go to this, you won't see that there are 7 targets that have not been achieved. And therefore, the point that I'm making is that in future, when you come with a presentation, say, program 5 property construction industry policy and research has so many targets, so many have been met, so many have not been met. And then you are able to explain what are the specific targets, achievement with regard to those targets that have been met, and what are the specific targets, I mean, what the information relate to those that have not been achieved. So I just wanted to indicate that. But also in addition, so that members don't go from this program. You see, there's this section that deals with the human resource. Human resource. It gives you all the information there in terms of staff. So if at least in each of the programs, say under administration, we have so many positions filled, so many positions unfilled, so that you don't have to go from program to that particular area that deals with human resources. I just wanted to indicate those observations, you know. So I will now allow members to ask questions. Honorable Faba, Honorable Makwebu. Okay, the two for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, our minister makes me think of Donald Trump. Not because of signing agreements, etc., but he's like the previous TV act, when it's you hire, then you fire. So if you don't do your job, I know this minister just say you fire. So I like his no-nonsense attitude, and I think that is maybe why we see there is a difference in public works. I actually would like to, before I go into the report, just Minister Cronin, Deputy Minister Cronin is not here today, but specifically on assets, I had a problem almost 2 years ago, and this was in the Hartswater. We are here representing provinces. And in the Hartswater Jan Kemp area specifically, I had the problem already two and a half years ago, of houses that is public works properties, that is actually police houses for the police. These houses are dilapidated and nothing has happened in 2.5 years. And the problem that I've got is, how do we determine values of assets of property if it's dilapidated? Because it's nice showing us this is the values, but that value of that house might have been R1 million or R800,000 then. It's only R100,000 now. It's pieces of ruins. Now, on the asset register as well, we need to understand when will this, number one, this asset register, because I need to understand I'm representing a province, the Northern Cape. I don't have, perhaps I'm missing it, but I would like to have a provincial overview of our public works on the asset register so that I can actually go and have a look at that and say, but okay, in Hartswater, I've seen this. This has been done in the last year, or this has not been done. I cannot unfortunately see it with this huge report. I understand you're a national department sitting in front of us. But I do believe that we as provincial delegates, this is the only way I believe that I can really come to you and say, but the problem in Hartswater has been solved because I can actually see it. I don't get these figures, unfortunately, from the province. So if there's a way that we can perhaps get that. I will not go into program 4, as it seems that we need a workable plan to solve these challenges or problems with the rental agreements on that target. As you were explaining to us, I don't know if you've got a plan. If you can perhaps share it with us, I would really like to know. That is all for now. Thank you, Chair.
The program 4, you mean the PMTE?
Yes.
Oh, not the department. Honorable Makwebu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to reiterate, you know, and commend the department, you know, for really the strides, and I think that must be said. That must be said. And though a minister, you know, I'm worried. There's a lot of chance and a lot of testosterone, with due respect. We need to deal with the gender issue. There's a lot of gentlemen from public works. I'm sure they are capable women to be part of your team. I'm just saying it in person. But on in the main, I've got a few questions. 38% on slide 26, 38% reduction in fraud and corruption, gentlemen. The target was 50% and we've underachieved by 12. I just want to know what are the challenges then, and what remedial action has been put in place for obvious reasons that fraud and corruption is the biggest challenge in public administration or in the country as a whole. Again, on finance and supply chain management, 75% compliant. Our target was 100%. I'm sure there is a remedial action you put in place to ensure that, because these are, you know, suppliers that must be paid and to keep them in business and give them a livelihood. What are the remedial actions to ensure that we stick to 30-day turnaround to ensure that, you know, our invoices are paid? And then quickly, Chairperson, I'll go to slide number 27. Slide number 27, we're talking here about four cases, seven out of seven, your fraud and corruption cases. Seven out of seven. Four finalized, three are pending disciplinary processes. But I want to stick quickly to the four that have been finalized. Now, can you assist me with the following quickly? One, those four, are you able to give us or share information with us? What was the monetary value of those four? Secondly, how were they resolved? Because now you're telling us that they are, or it is your submission to us that they were finalized. But how were they resolved? Because you resolve cases in many ways, and we want to know. Were there criminal prosecutions? If so, what were the outcomes? Are they still pending in court? Two, were there disciplinary processes? And if so, what were the outcome of the disciplinary processes? Recovery of loss suffered by the department. Were there recoveries of the money, the public fund? And if so, vis-a-vis the monetary value of those cases, vis-a-vis what we have recovered. We want to know that. And I must also say, the three pending, currently who's sitting here now, what is the progress? If you're able to share that information with us. And finally, Chairperson, on the issue close to my heart, the Expanded Public Works Program. The Expanded Public Works Program, I see the department is doing strides, and I'm very happy, particularly in the Eastern Cape. Minister, I see we're leading there, 50+, and coming from there, knowing the challenges there, I'm happy that the department is giving us a good deal there. But having said that, I'm worried in the manner that the program is being done, because many, are saying, and I agree with that notion, and I want to see if you agree with me, is it done in a manner that is fair and transparent? Is it done in a manner that gives everybody an equal opportunity, regardless of who you are, regardless of how you look, what is your race, what is your background, as long as you're making yourself available because you need a work opportunity or you need job skills? And this has been a thorny issue, and an issue, I think, Minister, you remember when you appeared before the NCOP last year, you also raised your frustration around this issue, that, municipalities particularly, it's not done in a manner that takes us to confidence that it is fair and transparent and it affords everyone an opportunity. Now, how can you then, assist in making sure that this is done in a manner that, promotes fairness and transparency? And last, Chairperson, with your permission, financials, I don't have anything to falter there, probably because my financials, you took time to deliver on that one, and I'm quite happy. Yeah, that's about all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Then, other hands, Honorable Teller.
Okay, I think I should firstly agree with your sentiments about the issues that you raised earlier. And quickly, I just want to ask the following questions. Is there, CFO, is there 19 million unspent on the delay of vacant posts, the filling of vacant posts, and why? On the implementation of the expanded public works program, what is the underspend amount? Is it 10 million and why? On program 4, is it 5.5 million and why? On goods and services, is it 6.3 million and why? Lastly, Minister, you know, since 2014, we've been told that the asset register is sitting at 99%, the next meeting is 95%, the next meeting is 99%. Where is it? Is it concluded? If not, when is it going to be concluded? Thank you.
Honourable Mako.
Chair, because of the questions, I'll just make two comments. The first one is to say that where our problem is coming from. We're saying that the EPWP can be improved upon in the provision of skills that would ensure particularly the young people who are participating in the EPWP to be able to secure employment opportunities beyond that which the EPWP offers. And in the Gauteng province, we are looking at utilizing EPWP in that way. You know, we, for example, have the Innovation Hub and Story, and we say, let's look at whether we can then, while we have people in their facility, link them so that the skills that they acquire while being EPWP manufacturers, beneficially, if I can. That's the first one. The second one that I think is just going to be important to share is the thing of the property. Now, over the last weekend, I was with the person responsible for DID within our property, and we are saying that there's great potential to contribute towards economic growth by utilizing that. But what we have as difficulty is which property belongs to who. I'm working on a project now with PBWP. We're looking at the property in Eldorado Park. I go there, I'm told the property belongs to the Hauteng Road. And me to the MEP says, no, this property belongs to the network. Then I go just across the road to Devlin, and there's a beautiful structure. You know about that part, in Devlin. It's extending them. And yeah, I'm looking for a center in which you can provide training to young people. So my appeal with that example this moment is to say that we've done very well, Honorable Faber has raised the question, we've done very well in the province in terms of the compilation of our own provincial efforts. I think the municipality in the five city region as for structure. And maybe the appeal would be to DPW to then look at how do you cooperate with the provincial department so that the municipality can be there as well to deal also with their property, because the potential for that to contribute towards growth of our economy is Azure of that.
Thank you very much. Yes, Honourable Lord.
Chairperson, just on what Honorable Tebe said, that asset register, what would prevent, let's say it's at 95 or 96, the department of giving the register as it is now so that we can finally have a look at that? Because all types of figures are being thrown out there, but there's nothing really that backs up the figures that gets thrown around. And this department is actually the one department that has done all the work to make sure that we can talk on the facts and then start making the necessary changes to the legislation and address whatever the register might indicate. But it's now been quite a while, and I don't see why we cannot have the register as it is now submitted to the select committee or the portfolio committee for that matter, and then you can still complete it. You can just make a note at the bottom and say this is a working document at this stage. So Chairperson, I'll leave that to you to make a call on that, but that's my suggestion, that we request that we get the document as it is now. The second thing, we sat with this department last year, and not just us, the National Assembly, quite a few hours discussing the expropriation bill. Over the weekend or end of last week was referred back. And we raised concerns with the department and with the colleagues in this committee on a few matters that we were concerned with and the processes that were followed, and it was bulldozed through. And what is going to be done from your side, Chair, and also from the department, so that we don't sit with this situation again, so that when valid arguments, valid points are made, doesn't have to come back to Parliament.
Honourable Mathieu.
Just to set Honourable on the preview, Chair. The asset register was shared with us last year. If you don't have a copy, Shamila would still have a copy. It was shared with us last year. It was emailed to everybody. That's how I got my copy.
You probably couldn't see because you care, but I like that.
Yeah, I think with regard to the expropriation bill, there's a letter that was written to the speaker. I think the chairperson of the NCOP is from the president with regard to the referral of the expropriation bill. It's now sent to the National Assembly, so it's going to go through those processes, going to be taken to the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, and once it's done, then go back to the House for consideration, and then after that, it comes back to the NCOP for concurrence. So that process is going to be followed through. But I just wanted to follow up on the issues raised by Honorable Kuwe with regard to the ownership, particularly of the FED. There's a general perception, particularly the municipality where I come from in the Buffalo City. I don't know if it happens also in other provinces. You find that, you know, in the past you find that people will just come to a land, put up sex. But now it's no longer only sex. You find people building nice houses in the land. And some, when you check with the municipality, they say, no, that land, there's nothing we can do. That land belongs to Public Works. And Public Works is not doing anything, so there's nothing they can do. But later on, you find out then, because the Public Works is not able to deal with that situation, they donate the land to the municipality. You know, Minister, there's this near the airport. It's London Airport. There are a lot of beautiful houses that are built there. And it is said that land belongs to Public Works. And later on I heard that then the Public Works donated to the Buffalo City Municipality because it can't deal with that situation. If you drive along, you go to the direction of Alice,
you just pass Kingolem Town, you know, is it R63? You know, there are beautiful houses there as well. That land is said to be belonging to Department of Public Works. I'm not sure if it has already now been donated to the Buffalo City Municipality. That's also a few questions with regard to the program, the on administration, under sub program management. There's a target of 50% with regard to the reduction of fraud and corruption risk level. Only 38% was achieved. For me, even the 50% target itself, target of reducing it should be 100%, but I'm sure you base on the reality and real situation, so that's why you're targeting 50. But now you can't even achieve 50, you're only achieving 38%. Last week we met this committee with the Department of Small Business and Small Business Development. The issue that they also raise, which affect small businesses, is this issue of 30 days. But I also note that, and we made commitments to the department that whenever we meet with any other department, we will raise this issue of, one, what is it that the departments are doing for small businesses? Two, how are they dealing with this issue of 30 days? Because it also affects small businesses. Some businesses rely entirely on the payments from this department. Now I see there was a target of 100%, only achieved 75%, which is a problem, especially for small businesses. The other problem is the one that I referred to, the program 4. None of the targets were met. It gives you a question, what is it that those people that are in that particular program doing if none of the targets were not met? But the last point is the separation of the PMTE from the department. Minister, how would it, if it was still a part of a function of the department and one of the programs of the department, how would it then affected the audit outcomes? Currently now you have an unqualified audit opinion. It would give an impression that perhaps this was a part of a program, the PMT, part of the programs of the department, but because it may be was contributing to the fact that the department was getting disclaimers and all other opinions that were negative. Now, therefore, you must just take out the problem so that you can have an unqualified audit opinion. You know, this is my assumption. Because I would have understood it better if then also now PMTE would also get an unqualified report, then I would not have this assumption. But I'm having this assumption because it has not got a clean audit or unqualified audit opinion. As if now you say, you look at the program, you say, this is the problem. That's why we're getting this disclaimer. Let's take it out and have it as an entity on its own so that as a department we can get an unqualified or even clean audit. Is that tell me if it's a correct assumption or not. You can then respond to the questions. So there are no other questions from members.
I will take just one or two questions, or respond to one or two questions. Maybe starting with the last one. Chair, the separation, the assumption is wrong. Separation of the PMT from the department. It's a long standing decision of cabinet as early as 2006. That's when the decision was taken. And the reasoning was that you cannot be able to deal with this property portfolio, which is so complex in terms of the ordinary departmental processes. That's what informed that. It's too huge, and it needed very specialized people. This man is borrowed from the private company, seconded. He's not a consultant. He's seconded. He's on his third year. He was supposed to have left last year. A lot of the people we're dealing with, we've had to go and speak to property companies because we don't have that skill in the department. It comes very expensive. It was until we had finalized the new structure. Then we are going to start advertising. But it's going to affect, I can even see we're going to go back to the department and argue for special dispensation in terms of the salary structure, if we want to attract the people who can drive that. Because you need chartered accountants like him, you need actuaries, you need property economists, property lawyers. I can mention a lot of them. That's the type of the personnel which you need. That's why I was saying you don't need the general. And property management in public works, together with construction, where you need these all types of engineers, land surveyors, architects, you mentioned them, artisans, that constitute about 75% of the work. That's why I said those who are conceptualizing public works some time back thought that is a general department, and it's not. It's proving now to be a key department, like you were saying, in infrastructure of the government and contributing towards economic development, and I think you were right. So that was the decision, but there was a debate whether you make it an entity. We refused to make it an entity, because an entity, it meant it must have a separate board. You see? You know what is happening. We can't increase the entities when we're having challenges. But we said we had to ring fence it. So that's what is happening. But also, even if you look at the financial performance, as they were saying, issues of concern are going down on both sides. I mean, with the PMTE, it started at 27. Now we have, 2. So there's good performance on that side. I thought that I must clarify that. The second one is but they will explain this. I think they can explain it further. The issue of 30 days. There are instances where we are guilty, but there are instances where we are not guilty. People have jumped into the bandwagon. Even those who knew that they submitted what they know that is not acceptable. Overstatement things, overstated things in terms of what they are claiming from the department. Some have not even submitted the right invoices. And we query them, we sit with them, we say, we can't pay this. It's regarded as not paid within 30 days. So even disputed. And the danger is that if officials pay those disputed things because of this pressure, they're going to be caught. So sometimes it has to do with wrong invoices because everybody's jumping into the bandwagon. What we've been doing is to move region by region. Call all those who say we have our claims which have not been paid. Let's talk about them one by one. Let's put joint teams. And some of them who come and claim, they just disappear, run away. And quickly run into the media, this is and so on and so on. But I think there are areas where we've not done properly when we're supposed to do that. But I think they will be able to explain better. The other one, which I thought Chair must respond to, land first, all shall follow. On this issue of the land, a very complex matter. It's a very complex matter. Because government has a lot of open land, including farms. Lots. Where people just occupy. And remember, we've had this judgment. Is it? What judgment was that? There was this judgment, which if people have occupied your space, as you remove them, if they can stay for more than this particular time, give them the alternative. That has been the biggest problem. And Chairperson, it's true that around the East London Airport, but there are different land parcels there. Not all of them are ours. Some parts are ours. But part of the problem is, I would say, it's even syndicates inside all the government departments. You know, as you are saying it, half of the people in that land around East London, it's public servants portraying themselves as if they are poor. But you look at the nature of the houses, because they are running away from paying rates in the city. It's public servants. Well-orchestrated schemes to occupy that particular land. But you remember now there's also a political movement which is occupying the land. And they see it, plan and target that. Which then maybe would need to talk about a strategy of how to deal with that. But part of this problem is empty buildings. We do have a lot of empty buildings. There's a big discussion how to dispose some of the buildings. That's what Gauteng has done. In fact, the model of Gauteng is very attractive to us. How do you dispose some of those? But as you deal with that, there's a big question. You dispose something now. 4 or 5 years later, you want it. You see, and then by that time, its price, market price, has gone 10 times. But we've also had horrible, horrible things happening. A property exchanges hands, we're forced to sell it. We give it to some municipality to set it for development. And then within a year you hear, or following year, it has been sold to some private developers. And then the following year or 6 months down the line, government in the province or the what you call municipality wants that property. And then now it's already 10 times more, it's 11 million. There's a lot of funny things which are happening. But I think on this question of the land, we will have to, and you are right, have to work together with the provinces and municipalities. We've been cooperating when we're dealing with this register with the provinces. Some of the provinces are cooperating very well. There might be one or two provinces which are behind, but we have been insisting through the min-man that let's work together. But there's a very nice tendency, like you're saying, when the property is hot, nobody wants to associate himself or herself with it. No. It belongs to national. But when it's not hot, no. It's ours. There's nothing you can do. But I think a lot of loopholes now are with the municipalities. And it becomes a question of some of the municipalities, if they ask me questions, who are you? You don't understand the three spheres of government, that relative autonomy. That is there politically. You can't tell some of them, even when you want to advise them, they literally resist. In fact, I've been dealing with some of the questions, taking time to respond to them, only to find that, no man, this question is supposed to be asked in a municipality, or it's supposed to be asked in a province, but it comes to us. And it remains an outstanding question until we try and get some information and so on. So that cooperation between the three spheres is very important, and it must be encouraged. That cooperation is very important. And it goes across the political divide. not about that. This particular area is controlled by the DA. They do not want to cooperate. Or what? It's a cross-political divide. You might find that a sphere nationally controlled by the ANC and provincially it's the, or in a municipality is an ANC municipality, but there's no cooperation because people cling to this thing of the powers. That, no, we have, and I think it's something political which honorable members must also deal with, especially in the NCOP. The last one is on the expropriation. We have put an argument, Jefferson. We have put an argument that issues or objections which have been raised in relation to the expropriation bill, it's about process issues, the processing, not substantive issues. And we thought that right is put to the door of the NCOP because people are talking about consultation with the provinces. That was the main objection which has been put very little on substantive issues. And therefore the NCOP must be lively to that one. But I will leave all the others to the officials. Yes, I'll leave it to the officials. I think they have better answers.
Chair, thanks. I'll be very brief. The quick question is, the asset register we completed 31st March 2016. That project came to an end. We are in the process of that audit was finalized. We are in the process of the new audit cycle now. Okay, so we'll be submitting an update because it's a living document. We'll be submitting a further the register for audit when the financials are due, I think, end of May. The asset register has fundamentally shifted the way we look at the department and the PMC in particular in terms of the work that needs to be done. And I'll give an example. I mean, there's always questions around properties that are vacant or dilapidated, for instance. Now, I'll start at a point that says, firstly, we physically verified all the properties. So if one looks at the asset register, there is an indicative condition or there is an indication of the condition of the structure that we are referring to. From poor to excellent. So in essence, that then gets factored in when you do the valuation or the determination of the deem cost. So that one I'm quite clear about. The issue, as you have put it, and it's a very good example, the SAPS example, because the challenges that we are facing, in fact, even in this last week, we had a specific example again. Is the departments when they no longer use the particularly the residential properties, they do not have the discipline of advising us that we have stopped using the property in the Yardcamp drop. You may now go and evaluate it and then see what you want to do with the property. So that does not happen. So in our books, it's still registered as being used by SAPS. And you can imagine there's over 36,000 of these residential properties on our asset register. The process that we are currently undergoing, which that's just the residential properties. It's a very big portfolio, and I think the discussion that is now happening within the department with the leadership of Minister as well is to say, come up with a methodology of declaring what is surplus to the state. I mean, you can, once you have segregated your property, you get to an answer fairly quickly at a high level. For instance, I was deliberate to give you a breakdown. I said there are approximately, let's say about 7,000 properties that are offices. then you've got approximately 36,000 is residential. The rest of them are actually very core to our operations, because you are talking about prisons, you are talking about courts, you are talking about specialized labs, you are talking about a hospital like One Military Hospital, which is SANDF, you know, as an example. So those you will never ever be declared as surplus to the state. So we already know we need to be looking and focusing specifically around the residential portfolio. The second one, Minister.
Just before that, I want to emphasize this. The main culprits for us is defense, police, and justice and corrections. We give them these houses. We delegate. Look after this house because we are using it and so on. And then when they leave, they do not want it. We just hear from the air. There's nothing formal, like we have formalized that we are giving it to you. But we're starting to correct that and call you, I mean, dealing with it at the political level and at the highest management level to deal with those issues. Thank you.
There were some nice slides that you know were indicating the kind of capability that we have. You know, we have attached GIS locations to all the properties, land, and so forth. And you know, if one wanted to look at a provincial perspective specific to land, you can see it on a map. You know, that's the level of capability that is attached to the asset register at the moment. My suggestion, Chair, is the problem with the asset register is there's 92,500 structures. There's 31,300 land parcels. It is not the kind of working document that you can work without a briefing from us. And I would like to just propose that we would gladly come and with a prepared briefing in detail around how we are using the asset register. Yes, in its raw format, it's not usable. In its raw format, it's not very user friendly. Yeah. The issues then, there was a question specifically asked around the leasing, and I will just reflect. I mean, it's just now a year ago we launched our research unit. So research unit, we started it when Minister mentioned the actuaries. It's got actuarial consultants, it's got economists, and it's got core researchers in the team. And what they do is they mine the data in the environment, you know, in the marketplace, and apply it to our portfolio continuously. Whether you are talking about what is the state of transformation in our portfolio, they have the capability to do that. They've done a report that has that perspective. They have done a report specific to a, you know, what is the state of the properties market in Pretoria in relation to us. Now, let me give you an example of what we are talking about. We are talking about, for instance, an example that the CBD of Pretoria, one would understand, is where the head offices are in the main of government. The available office space in the CBD or core CBD of Pretoria is 706,000 square meters. We know, as we sit here, that we are occupying 95% of that space. So it gives you a perspective of how we are interacting with the market. So we have done that for Pretoria, we have done that for Johannesburg and the major centers, Durban, and so forth. And we are rolling it out to the rest of the portfolio. We have taken it, we are looking at it from a security cluster perspective, and we have clustered it accordingly, which aims to support the management decisions that we ought to be making. The silver bullet for us is that it then informed or supported the strategy that led us to a particular place that says the manner in which you procure infrastructure, in this instance leasing, is fundamentally different to the manner in which you procure desks and chairs and notebooks and so forth. If you understand the market, I mean, if you know that you are occupying 95% of a particular market for a particular reason, it's a bit of a senseless exercise to continuously do certain things the same way as you have always done them. So that led to a discussion between us and Treasury through the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to start the fast tracking of the framework which is specific to the procurement of leases. We are expecting that it will be finalized end of March and apply and be specific end of beginning of April. On our side, we preempted this because we are working with Treasury. So our advert, in line with the new approach, went out in November. And I mean, for us, it did, you know, our information informed us quite clearly. In fact, the sector of landlords was not ready for such drastic reforms. That is why the period for the responses was so long. We will be closing off at the end of February, and we'll be assessing it as a national project. ICT developed a system that will then manage this internally. I think I mentioned that. Because at the end of the day, what we are looking for is a system that will be able to tell us how many of our landlords, if we are looking for 4,000 square meters in a particular area, give us all the available information in that particular area. And we, this process now is a tender that's gone out to establish that register nationally, you know, which we'll be managing. It will also give us an indication of the national footprint and our interaction with the national footprint of properties. And if one extends it a bit further, you'll start to also be able to have access for other planning imperatives such as the state of transformation in the sector. The short answer is that the reforms with respect to the procurement in leasing are really at the stage of implementation. We have already started that implementation. Any new leases going forward will be negotiated on the basis of, firstly, a reference to what the market is telling us based on the information that we have. You know, in most instances, there's one or two sources, but we've also got our men of determining how we view the market. What we have also done is to say we are building the capability to also assess the condition of the building, which is the next step, which justifies a positive or negative to the average market price, the condition of the facilities that you have, and so forth. So we have already, we're actually a long way in terms of the implementation as far as that is concerned. The other questions, I think, are specific to finance, and I'll ask the CFO to pick up on those. EPWP, there is a question, and on the issue of fraud and corruption, I will ask the DDG Corporate Services to just handle that matter. Thank you.
We have minutes that we have been postponing to adopt. We even have 3 sets now of minutes. We don't want to find a situation where we have 4.
Yes.
So I want to plead with you that 3 minutes. I was asking if you were not a lecturer.
Okay, I'll be very quick. The 30-day payments issue for the Department of the PMT in terms of the challenges are two separate matters. In the main booklet, the 75%, the 25% that's not achieved is a result of just two main accounts. One is the travel, because we have to verify the travel time, and the other one is the on the communications. So that's the reason. On the PMT, we've achieved 85% of, you know, paying within 30 days. So 15% is out of 30 days. And that's where the impact will be felt with the contractors and the sponsors, which you correctly have put. And I think the ministers articulated the potential, the challenges that we have on those. So there's a contributory factors from ourselves and the service providers. And again, one has to also look at the PMT business. It's a very complex business. When you look at our supply chain management processes of government that you prescribe, they are still very complex. For service providers to comply, for everybody to comply, it's very difficult. So those are the kind of things that we're talking about. But that does not mean we do not contribute to the thing. And we're dealing with it and applying the plans that we put in place with a new system that automates invoice tracking and so on. Then there was a question, and 100%, the target is set at 100%. Why? Because it's an illegal requirement. You can't go set a 90% target, which means you decided that I'll not comply 10%, and that's already incorrect. So we have to set it at 100%. And the question that was asked with respect to unlike furniture, if you go to slide 25, I think we've outlined that 3D in a little bit of detail where the unlikenesses are coming from. And I think Honourable Member has actually picked them up pretty well. And that corrects Honourable Member Tebbit, that we have that's where it comes from. On slide 25, we've detailed it, starting with the compensation of employees. I'm not sure what Mr. Matang will say. Starting with the compensation of employees and explaining why it happened and the reason why we did not spend the amount of money. Like I said in my presentation, we were managing the compensation of employees' budget so tightly that we actually had to stretch the capacity that we had to do the work of, you know, more than what they could do by trying to manage this. We are currently sitting with quite a number of people, like the minister indicated earlier on. The department is settled with support staff, whereas the highly technical department. So in essence, you've got to really manage this thing, and now we have a new structure which we need to migrate into. And migrating that, you could blow the budget quickly. So we have to manage this thing tightly, to the extent that by the time we then started the process of recruiting, that was almost towards the end of the year. So we are paying now 3 months people that are on the job, as opposed to 12 months, and hence the unexposure. It was just our effort to try and manage it, because we had a past experience of overshooting the expenditure, and we didn't want to get into that situation. So we went through, that was the process. And I think the one last issue that was on the the separation of the PMTE from the main vote, I think I've explained that. Minister has also tried to do that. But maybe my comment on that is what is this, that PMTE business is a very complex business. PMTE business is about property management, but supporting the state property management function, it's a highly intensive procurement activity. Like I said, the business is 12 billion rand. If you procure 12 billion rand in a year, that means on average it's 1 billion rand a month. And you've got all this very complex supply chain process. It's a very complex thing. So for us to move, when you look at our audit outcomes over time, we have worked down the issue from, as we said, from 22 items to 22. So really, just to try and underscore the point of the minister, that it doesn't to manipulate to get, so let's move away from the PMT, from the main board, and let that one be cleaned now. I think you can see the trend as well. And clean audit is a journey, not an event.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe quickly, the issue around the fraud and corruption target, the 50% versus the 80%, it's a fraud risk. It's not a fraud corruption target. It's not to reduce fraud and corruption, but it's a risk. In other words, we've identified certain risks, and we then said we must work towards reducing those risks. Now, the reason why we could not achieve that target of reducing this risk was one of the critical areas we've identified that will assist in us reaching that 50% was putting into place an ICT system that will assist us in reducing the risk. As we speak now, we're currently in the implementation of that new IT system that will bring about an integrated approach the whole value chain of the business, including the PMT and DPW. And we've delayed in implementing it because it has the target of the past 3 years to implement it by now.
and we'll be going live at the end of the financial year 31 March 2017, in terms of that. So that is the reason why at that time, during that financial year, we did not reach our target. It's because it was not completed the implementation of this new ICT system. We're introducing a new system called Archibus and Sage, which we hope then will be able to bring an integrated approach to the total business of running the department. With regards to the misconduct cases, there is no specific monetary value that were lost, because these were cases of individual employees where they were regarded and charged for engaging in fraud and corruption by virtue of the fact that one, for instance, did not disclose the benefit from service providers that they might have accrued. Or, for instance, if I could take one case, the Mawato case, where the employee had registered that company but in his mother's name, and it participated in procurement processes. And when we investigated, we discovered that the mother does not know anything about the company. The actual person knows something about the company. Is this person who is an employee? And the company then benefited through the procurement processes. So we then had to charge this person, found her guilty, dismissed her, and the company then lost the contract. So there's no benefit, there's no monetary loss with that of the department. That's the one example. The other example is with regards to a private vehicle, an owner of a private vehicle, who then paid our employee for an exchange of a fuel, you know, buying fuel for him using the government petrol card. Those type of cases, which we spoke about fraud and corruption, they were dismissed. They are concluded and they were dismissed. They were dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, just on EPWP, the first question was about the 10 million which the CFO has explained. It was on compensation, late filling of posts. The other question about the fair, is it fair and transparent? It's one of our principles on EPWP Phase 3, that the recruitment of participants has to be fair and transparent. So it's something that we're advocating in all the provinces. But also we've come up now with a recruitment guideline, which we shall be issuing out to public bodies in the next month. That has been workshopped and consulted with the different municipalities and stakeholders. And so we're going to release that to further guide public bodies on how they can recruit in a fair and transparent method. But I think it's also important that and our political principals have also advocated that when they engage with different politicians, to say it's critical and stakeholders that we are fair and transparent. In terms of skills, training is a very important aspect of EPWP as well. We have an MOU with the Department of Higher Education and Training through the National Skills Fund, and the MOU we have is to a value of 369 million through the NSF. Out of that, our targets are to train 22,000 participants in the skills programs, artisan participants, our target is 200, and then learnerships is 800. So far on the skills program, we've trained 19,000, I guess the target of 22,000. On the artisan program, we've rolled out 98, I guess the target of 200. A lot of the challenges there have been placements, like for example, we're partnering with a mass sitter to train youth that will place to VW, so in terms of skills development. And we're currently working with the National Skills Fund. We've submitted another application for additional funding worth $500 million that we're waiting feedback from them. We're engaging with them. But I think also we're also working with different public bodies to say they should set aside part of the project budget for training, because the funding from the National Skills Fund is not sufficient to train all the participants or to the extent that we would like. So, but I think just to say that training is something that we're advocating very strongly. And the Skills Center in El Dorado, we had an engagement last month with our DDG. We went there to see exactly what's happening. And we'd want to engage further with different skills centers so that we can promote training of youth
especially. Thank you.
I usually give this last to the minister for concluding remarks, but he has indicated that he's got another engagement that he's rushing to. But I'll give 2 minutes to the leader of the delegation if any concluding remarks, areas that he wanted to have highlighted and emphasized.
Listen, can I just have 1 second? I mean, 30 seconds.
Okay.
Just want the response from the DDG. I'm pretty much not happy with the response, with due respect. You see, just on the 2 examples you've given us, and this is something I want to plead with the department to go back to the drawing board and address it. The issue of fraud and corruption, how you're dealing with it, if it's in the manner you're dealing with it, it's not satisfactory. Just let's take these 2 examples. If someone uses the garage of the government, the petrol card, to fill a private vehicle, whether it belongs to your wife or girlfriend, whoever, who are not entitled to that garage card, so it means that petrol was consumed not for official purposes. That's fraud. I need a case number. The department must go and complain to the police station. You become a complainant. Your transport officer, your transport manager must go and complete a statement called A1 and attest that this is what is applied to. So these processes must go parallel. You have a process of disciplinary whilst you have a criminal prosecution. This is how we should be dealing with fraud. Number one, let's go to the second example. You have a situation where one of your procurement officers set up a company in the name of his mother and then begins to do business. That's a serious fraud. And if you look, that's why I go to the, if you quantify how much business was given to that company, that's what is deemed as a monetary loss, because that money was undue enrichment. There was no competitive bidding, and the process was seriously flawed and undermined and compromised. This is what they call serious procurement fraud. You don't just simply deal with that official through your internal processes. You take that official, frogmash that official to the justice cluster or through the justice system, as it were, criminal justice system, where you lodge you open up a criminal case. You need to have a criminal case to say to us, this is what we have done, so that us then, we will follow it with the Department of Justice, what happened to this case. This is the tone. This is the tone you should be setting. You cannot just get rid of the problem, dismiss the person, and then what? Somebody must go and charge that person, you know, criminally. But somebody must trigger that process. The department must do that. Finally and lastly, on the issue of dismissal as well, you don't just dismiss, you blacklist. There are processes, government processes, whether it's when the public service administration must be advised of these issues, how it was dismissed. And as I'm saying, this is how you resolve these issues. 4 pillars. Prevention, detection, investigation, and resolution. Resolution is critical. How these cases go down is important. And I want to implore the department to go back to your governance and go back to your team. And next year, we would want a different approach. Every case that has been dealt with, if it's 7 out of 7, we'll want details, how it went down, both departmentally and criminally, if needs be. That's what I wanted to plead with the department. Thank you, Chair.
I think on these ones, perhaps there could be others as well. You are just making examples. Yeah. But what you want, instead of waiting for next year, or even, because I understand the next time we'll meet with you will be on the APPs. That will take us on, it could be around April or so. But we want on this one that he specifically is raising, together with others that people were just dismissed, but no cases were open. If you can have give us a list of those within 7 days, so that you don't wait for a long time for a response.
No, Chair. No, Chair, it's fine. It's fine, Chair. I think, Chair, the honourable member is correct. I'm not giving the full response. In fact, the governance approach is exactly like this. There are cases that we refer to the SIU to refer to the prosecution processes, but those that are reported were those that we have in Senate. But it doesn't end there. So you're correct.
Just give us a list of those.
Yeah.
And the case
number. Do that. Yeah.
And also the quality of those.
No, we'll do that. We'll do that.
Let me give it to the leader of
the committee. Thank you very much, Chair. I think I was just going to ask that we do a submission. All that work is there, it's done.
Yeah.
We have a whole unit that does that specifically, so there is a report we will just share it with the committee. Chair, I think for us it's just to thank you for the engagement. I think the successes that we have made are also the result of the very immense and detailed contribution that we have received from Parliament throughout the process. Thank you very much.
Now let us also take this opportunity, I think, on behalf of the committee to thank you for presenting the annual performance report. We also appreciate the strides the department has made. You know, the minister, whenever he comes to the plenary, you know, maybe it's whether it's the budget vote, we'll always, you know, talk about the patient, that liking the department as a patient with the different stages, intensive care unit, now it's out of the intensive care unit, now it's an outpatient, you know. So we really appreciate and encourage you to continue. I hope next time when we report on both the department and the entity, we'll have clean audit, because both have only two issues that must be dealt with. So next time we hope that we will have a clean audit, both the department and the entity. Thank you very much. Members will remain. We will excuse the department. Thank you. Honourable members, I think the challenge that I was hearing earlier with regard to this sets of minutes, I think we, thank you very much, we are facing the same challenge that we faced last time. The delay was with regard to the Department of Small Business. They went beyond 1 o'clock, and we were also rushing for the joint sitting on the debate of zone. So we could not adopt the minutes. Now we have 3 sets of minutes, but now we're supposed to have 5 provinces to be able to adopt the minutes. We have 4 provinces. Now it goes without saying that we won't be able to adopt the minutes. The next meeting of the committee will be on the 7th. Next week, is Honorable Lunt here?
It's coming now.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you for coming back, Honorable Lunt. We were sort of one member to adopt the minutes. So we thank you for coming back. Otherwise, we are now 5 provinces. We dealing with 3 sets of minutes that we need to adopt. Otherwise, if we don't, it means the next meeting will have 4 sets of minutes. We start with the minutes of the 31st of January, the Department of Labor, and also on the same day, the Productivity SA.
Sorry, on
the 31st of January. We'll take 1 set of 3 minutes. Let's deal with the one of the Department of Labor.
Excuse me, Chair. Yeah. With your permission, may I just raise something on a procedural issue? I'm not sure if we are 5 provinces, because Faba was absent in both these meetings, so he won't be able to deliberate and assist us. So it takes us down to 4. I don't know if I'm technically.
No, we are 5. During the time where we were discussed, we were adopting the minutes. Not necessarily that whether he is here now. So we are 5 provinces. Yeah.
Thank you.
At the time of adopting the minutes, we had a quorum. It's a question of quorum. He may not participate, like myself, for example. I was not here on the 31st, even myself. Yeah.
Department of Labor, page 1.
Any correction or omission? Honorable Lunch?
Yeah, sorry, Chair.
The Department of
the Department of Labor, eh?
Yeah.
Still on page 1.
Okay.
Anything on page 1?
No.
Okay.
Page 2.
Just a farm is just a bit north of the Western Cape. We call it the Northern Cape. My colleague just said that.
Instead of Western Cape, Northern Cape.
Although we know many people want to come and stand here this day.
We are bringing the Western Cape story to the Northern Cape. One of these days will be the same.
Anything else on page 2? If not, page 3.
Chairperson?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
The apologies from the Minister and Deputy Minister, did we accept those apologies? Because as far as I know, it was pretty well articulated that we were not happy that their attendance has been less than satisfactory.
Yeah.
And that it will be communicated as such to them as well. And I don't know where you want to minute that, but I also stated it clearly that I felt that it was raised at a previous select committee meeting. Honorable Makwe felt that we didn't really put it down in writing, so I asked that it be put down in writing that we are not happy, and there wasn't anybody that spoke contrary to that.
Any other view? So the apologies were not accepted. Is it fine if we say were noted? Apologies were noted.
Well, Chair, how long are we still going to note the apologies? When are we going to start putting our foot down and say, listen, we actually need the political heads to come to this committee as well?
Can I take responsibility of perhaps writing to the House Chairperson and raise that particular challenge? But back to last week and this week, at least we had the ministers, but we must raise a concern with regard to those who do not come at all in the meeting. I think one of them is the Department of Labor. Department of Transport, we raised a concern in the meeting on the 24th of January about the absence of the Department of Transport. We still have to deal with the Department of Energy. Honorable Makwe, shaking his head.
I
don't think there is a difference. No, I raised it myself when I was chairing the meeting. I did raise it myself, the absence of both the minister and the deputy minister. But then the acting DDG made an apology for the minister that he had an injury. So that's why she couldn't attend on that particular day. Honorable Ted?
I just want to make a plea that when you raise it with the House Chair responsible for committees, please do an administrative check before. If I remember well, this last one, the Minister of Labour was not there, but the one before the Minister was here. Check it so that you don't say she does not attend at all. Say we are raising it because the attendance is not satisfactory. And I think that was the intent and the spirit that Honorable Faber raised it the last time. He said, look, we've been raising it, but it's not, we're not deriving any joy. Can we then put it into writing so that we can see whether it can be resolved? Thank you.
No, thank you for the guidance. okay. So how do we deal with this one then, the accepted or noted? No.
Okay, Chair, I think we can put it down as noted, but I also want it to be minuted
that as a committee we were not happy, because that was raised by the Honourable Makue and said, I've never raised it before, when in fact I have raised it before. And he said, well, it wasn't been minuted. So I actually want this to be minuted, that we are not happy with that. And I didn't say the Honourable Minister never came, but as far as I know, all the Labour meetings that I was here, she attended one. And the one she left after a very short period of time. So never would not be the accurate description, but only once is very close to never.
Okay, let's perhaps in terms of noting that the matter will be followed up with the House Chairperson, taking into consideration the point that Honourable Chebe is raising. Okay. Anything else on page 3? If nothing, can we go to page 4? Anything on page 4? Page 5? Page 4.
You know, we look at, when we do legislation, certain words get given more weight than other words. Now, last, when we were at the Department of Labour, same with the Department of Tourism, it's always nice that as a committee we speak out of one mouth, because we were all very disappointed with the performance. Now I go down here and you say, the members were concerned that reporting did not meet expectations. The committee noted that the programs are still a major challenge. Then there's the committee resolved that a comprehensive, I mean, for the Department of Labour, and we don't have, my colleagues can help me here, but for the Department of Labour, it's a grave concern, the performance of the Department of Labour over the previous year. They only performed at a 50% target, and some of those targets were very, very low targets that they set, and everybody had their say about that. But Chair, I'll leave that in your hands. Because the only reason I'm raising this now is that if we're going to need to recall these minutes at a future stage, and we only said, listen, we noted some of the concerns or we noted some of the challenges and not really express what we really felt and what I experienced, the mood of that meeting was, it will be a similar case where people will say, yeah, but nobody raised the serious concern they had previously because it wasn't minuted accordingly.
I'm trying to check where the correction should be on page 4.
No, he went to page 6. We're still on page
4.
Yeah, I think he went to page 6. So he should have on page 6 because my name should have been.
We're on the same minute.
Page 4.
Yes, page 4.
Yes.
The under point 3 deliberations. And I touched on 3 of the points that were there. And my concern that I've got now is that if we do not accurately reflect what the mood of the meeting was, then at a future stage, somebody will come back and say, listen, it wasn't that a serious concern that this select committee had on the performance of the Department of Labour, when in fact the way I read the mood and the comments in that meeting is there were some serious grave concerns about what's going on there and how they're not performing well. And my concern is just that that seriousness is not really reflected in the minutes. But I'm raising it for you as chairperson because the only time this will become relevant is if going forward we have a similar situation, we can refer back and say, well, last year we already had these concerns and nothing really was done. And I think we're putting it very mildly the way we felt in that meeting. That's just my opinion, Chair.
So you say that when it says the committee members were concerned that the reporting did not meet the expectation, do you think? You say that it's softer.
I should feel it should be put a bit more
harsh.
Harsh, the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, while you're thinking, I'm not going to text you. Okay. I thought you were raising your hand.
No.
You were waiting for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I come in, Jim? I think maybe to assist Yaku, what he's thinking. Maybe, I think he's got a point there, but maybe we should just word it in a manner where we say department's performance, if you're referring to performance, or to their targets, whatever we refer to. Unacceptable, you know. Maybe that will take away that terminology that says we are concerned. We should make it clear this is unacceptable. 31%, 50% is unacceptable. Just a view.
Maybe Chairperson, right at the top, you can leave it as it is, but right at the top, I don't think everybody in the committee would approve the word unacceptable, but I don't think it's a bad word to use, that the performance of the Department of Labor were far below par or the expected level, and the committee has some serious concerns about the level of performance, and then leave the rest as it is, because that will then be your first paragraph, and then the rest will just flow from that. That's a suggestion there.
Great. Okay. Perhaps because the department has performed, you say around 50%. Maybe we have a responsibility as well as a committee. If a department is like that, we should not really wait until we receive the annual report. I think perhaps in the strategic committee strategic planning session. We should identify it as you see when we will be dealing with the okay, let me put it this way, the National Assembly Portfolio Committees, other than just the annual report and the APPs, they also deal with the quarterly reports. But because of the nature of our committee, we deal with many departments. It's sometimes impossible to do exactly what the NA is doing. But perhaps what we could do as this committee in the planning session is to identify departments that we think that we should focus on them with regard to their performance, even if it means for that particular department, we will also have a quarterly reports, quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, but those that perhaps are performing better, we may not necessarily do that because of the many departments that we're dealing with, but we could choose maybe one or two or even three departments that we say on these two or three departments we will have a focus. We won't wait for their annual performance report, we won't wait for their APP, but we'll also monitor them through quarterly reports. Can you agree that? But it's a matter, I'm raising it now as a one, but it's a matter that we will concretize in the strategy planning session, the viability of that. In that session.
I think it's a brilliant idea, Chief. Brilliant.
Okay. Honorable Kevin.
No, Chair, I don't differ with you, but I think we need to go deeper than that and do a total overhaul of how we do our work. In the last three meetings that we had annual reports presented to us when we are at the brink of another coming budget year. So it means to us, in fact, they were upfront. They even said to us, we are presenting to you this when we are already at the closure of presenting another budget. So I'm just saying, during our strategic session, probably we need to look at the total overhaul of how we work. And this thing of having presentation, the same content, context and nature of the reports that are presented in the portfolio committees. It's not serving any purpose. And in the meeting, in your absence, we agreed that we will, however, try to find means and ways of enriching the expectation of the reports that we want to have coming to us, moving into the future. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think, like you said, then in the strategic planning session, we will then deal with it. Because sometimes the problem also has to do with the NCOP program itself, because we supposed to be dealing with this annual report around October. So we know that we're done with them. I know with regard to this particular one, if you remember, in one of the ATCs, they made a request because they were late in terms of submitting even the annual report, the public care works. They contributed to that. All these other issues, then we will concretize them in the strategic planning session, which departments we think we should really play a focus on, and also the form and the nature of the reports that must come to the select committee. That must be different from the committee, because sometimes they just change that word, the portfolio committee, and put select committee. The content is the same. There's no focus on provinces.
Some of them actually still read and are pleased to present to the portfolio committee.
You see.
Copy machine today.
Yeah. Okay. Page 5. Anything on page 5?
No.
Page 6?
No.
Okay. Can we have a formal mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes?
For the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
Honorable Makwebu moves, and Honorable Ntele second.
Second with the correction on my name. I'm
BG. BG, okay.
BGs.
The next step is on the same day, Productivity South Africa. Page 1. We must also look at whether names are spelled correctly. Page 2.
Just again, a Western case represented on page 2 as well.
Are you still are you still Western case? Great. We want to Honorable Faber to come and stay. But you've been with Honorable Faber before we do some of our students came here. page 3. I'll rush now because members are think they're not focused. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Which is the last one. Any mover in the seconder? Honorable Ntere. Seconder?
7 minutes.
Honorable Makwiru. The last one was last week, Valentine's Day. Page 1, page 2,
again Western Cape
again.
we are going to do our list soon. Please stop with that. He's going to want to come here to this prom.
Oh, okay. Go to Renaissance. Page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, and page 9. Move on the seconder.
All is good, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Seconder, Honorable Terry. I see on the agenda there's an item on matters arising. Or as we were going. Okay. Oh, we're done then with the minutes. Honorable members, then that's the announcement. Next week we're having a planning session. We just busy with the framework, which will circulate to members, but it will be used as a base. When we get there, we have a base that we will be working from. We're also working on the logistics of the oversight visit to Mpumalanga. That will also be circulated to the members. In one of the committee meetings, we'll then deal with them formally and adopt it before we actually move to Mpumalanga. So that if members want to make some inputs on the whole program, are free to do so. Thank you very much for attendance. The meeting is adjourned.
Ik stel me voor dat je hem te binnen vertrekt, ik kan nog een kopje.